It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Generic drugs barely existed a half century ago. In 1960, fewer than 1 out of 10 prescriptions was filled with a generic. Today, that proportion has almost flipped. Generics fill all but 1 of every 6 prescriptions. Anyone who takes medicines is faced with the choice repeatedly, for over-the-counter drugs even more than for prescriptions, because often with prescriptions, it's our insurers picking which one they'll pay for. Generic or brand name? Most of us have very little idea of what's involved when we make that choice. In September, I spoke with Dr. Jeremy Green, an associate professor of medicine and chair in the history of medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. In his book, Generic, The Unbranding of Modern Medicine, he traces how generics came to be, how they are regulated, current issues, and new issues cropping up with high-tech drugs. I began by asking him to define the term generic.
Well, a generic drug, as we use the term today, is really a drug that is therapeutically equivalent, approved by the Food and Drug Administration to be therapeutically equivalent with its innovator name brand version. And so that means that certain things have to be the same, but generic drugs are not fully identical to brand name drugs. So the FDA puts a lot of effort into ensuring that generic drugs contain the same active pharmaceutical ingredients and the same dosage, quality, that they have the same effect on the body according to all tests that we know to be relevant so far, particularly making sure the drug is absorbed in the body at the same rate, and also making sure that generic manufacturers maintain what are called good manufacturing practices, or GMPs, that they have a standard of quality in their manufacturing facilities that are the same or at least equivalent to the basic standards of pharmaceutical manufacturing practice. But in some ways, they necessarily differ from brand name drugs. Hopefully, these are trivial ways. We know when we go to the drugstore or when we fill our bottles each month that generic drugs differ from brand name drugs in the way they look. They can be different colors, shapes, and sizes. They can be different prices. Hopefully, they are cheaper than the brand name version. That's part of the reason that generic drug policy exists and is framed the way it is. And these differences we consider trivial. The similarities are essential. Part of the challenge going into the book is realizing that knowing what actually matters and calling two things the same in the world of medicine has changed dramatically over the past 50 years. And these are really historically emergent sciences. They're sciences of similarity that come up only when we realize that differences that we previously didn't notice can actually be quite significant.
Well, I got the impression that in the early days, big pharmaceutical companies, and by which I mean the 60s, big pharmaceutical companies with patents tried to paint generics with the same brush as counterfeit drugs and impure drugs. Was there just too much interest in saving money on the part of people who pay the bills, including consumers, to dismiss generics that way?
So I think that the answer to your question is really yes and no. So on the one hand, there was clear economic interest on the part of large name brand pharmaceutical companies to dismiss potential rivals and to really try and perpetuate what we could call trademark monopolies, their ability to have monopolies on the brand name long after their patent monopolies ended. And so many of the campaigns against generic drugs were brought about to inculcate fear on the parts of physicians and ultimate consumers. But when we look back at these controversies, it's not as if there was a single thing that was a generic drug that always was the same as brand name drugs and merely was being smeared because of a marketing campaign on the part of brand name companies. That actually the ways in which generic drugs were proven to be the same in the early 60s were through principles of chemical equivalence. The idea is that if you have the same pharmaceutical ingredient and the same amount in these two drugs, in a generic versus a brand name version, it must be the same thing. And it's really in the process of these battles in the 60s when brand name firms are insisting that there must be other forms of differences that one particular pill I would mention, a blockbuster drug called chloramycetin that is going off patent. It's really Park Davis's leading drug. There's three generic competitors.
Oh,
it's an antibiotic, very potent antibiotic used in life and death situations. And really, there's an anticipation of its patent cliff, of its going off patent. And you see it in business newspapers and journals, wondering what it will do to this company, Park Davis. Investors are concerned about what's going to happen when it faces generic competition. And the generic versions come out. They're much cheaper. They begin to take away market share from the original brand name drug, chloramycetin. And within a few months, though, it becomes apparent that one of these generic versions, if you put it in a glass of water, just leaves a kind of white scum on the surface and doesn't actually dissolve. And this leads to some investigations with human subjects, volunteers in quotes, many of them are prisoners, which shows that some of these pills, even though they contain the exact same amount of the active drug, they're chemically equivalent, can be swallowed by a volunteer and come out whole the other end without being dissolved at all.
So the patient is not getting any benefit.
The patient's not getting any benefit from a really crucial drug at a crucial moment in time. And it is this moment that leads to this. The FDA begins to realize it needs to regulate more than chemical equivalence. It also needs to regulate biological equivalence, these tests I mentioned earlier of how drugs are absorbed into the human body. But I bring this up because here you have an example of a historically emergent science of similarity, that according to all known proofs, these two drugs were similar beforehand, but there was an unknown form of difference that only became significant after the drug was launched. So one of the things we draw from this is that the FDA does, we are smarter than we were 50 years ago in the way that you mentioned, in the sense that we can feel safer that our regulatory apparatus is doing more to protect us and ensure claims of therapeutic equivalence. But we do need to attend to future sciences of similarity that may become necessary in the years to come.
That's Dr. Jeremy Green, Johns Hopkins Associate Professor of Medicine and the History of Medicine, here on Maryland Morning at WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his book, Generic, The Unbranding of Modern Medicine. You make clear that your book is not an expose about generics.
I use generic drugs myself and have to prescribe them pretty much every week in my clinic.
But are generics today as safe as brand name drugs?
I don't think there's any evidence right now to suggest that generic drugs are less safe than brand name drugs, no. I do think that there are concerns that come up when we think about the complexity of the production chains of generic and brand name drugs in the world today. So, for example, back in the 1960s, when you have early generic drug firms producing generic drugs, they often would receive the active pharmaceutical ingredient from a factory in Italy, say, where they observed process patents, but not product patents. And they would receive it, they would measure it, they would weigh it out, they'd stamp it in the tablets, and they'd sell those drugs. And that's how early generic drug firms, many of them, produced their drugs. That's one translocation from Italy to Hackensack, New Jersey, and then into pills and distributed around the country. According to the FDA, the average drug moves through 81 different locations in the process of forming its active pharmaceutical ingredient from raw product to finished good, and that these locations are all over the world. Now, this increases many, many levels of concern for purity and adulteration of pharmaceutical products, but there's no evidence that I've seen yet that suggests that this is any more worrisome for generic drugs than it is for brand name drugs.
You said you sometimes take generics and you prescribe generics. How do you make the choice? So when to go generic, when to stick with a name brand?
It's odd. You know, it's perhaps a bit perverse, Sheila, but I feel that almost the more important the drug I take, the more likely I am to use a generic version in my own consumption. I think when I do use brand name drugs, it's often for more trivial concerns. So, for example, I have migraines on occasion.
I'm sorry, I have them too.
So, and they come in different versions, and I don't mean to play too much of a tale of woe. Mine are fairly mild, they can incapacitate me a little bit. But what I do, every migraine sufferer has their own cure for a migraine, and mine is a very strong cup of coffee and ibuprofen, and it usually works for me. But I find it works better if I take an Advil than if I take generic ibuprofen. And the reasoning for this, I think, is entirely a placebo effect. I think it has something to do with the shape of the pills. You know, there are these little lentil-shaped pills. I think it has something to do with the sugar coating on the pills and something to do with the whole experience of taking this pill with a cup of coffee, and it works better for me. Now, this is an entirely personal, anecdotal response, and I'm willing to pay the few cents difference for this response myself as a consumer. But it gives rise to some questions of how and where these concepts of similarity are regulated. Because if this was true for everybody, if all migraine sufferers did better with the sugar coating on a lentil-shaped pill of ibuprofen than not, then the FDA should probably regulate that. And
regulate
yet we
don't. The shape and the sugar coating. And FDA is starting to look at that, right? They're starting to tell generic manufacturers, check out what these shape, color, size aspects have, check out what effect they have on patients.
The FDA is becoming increasingly interested in this subject, this idea, and there's increasing evidence that the appearance of a pill can affect its overall effectiveness. Not its efficacy as is judged in a placebo-controlled trial, but how it works in the real world. A recent study published in the Annals of Internal of Medicine showed that people leaving a hospital after having a heart attack were put on a complex regimen of very important drugs to try and help optimize their survival rates and their chance, their reduce their risks of another heart attack. They're significantly more likely to keep taking those medicines if their size, shape, and color stayed the same, if their appearances stayed the same month by month. One of the things you purchase when you purchase a brand name drug is that trademark, and that trademark extends to the actual visual, tactile experience of the drug. Those of us that consume generic drugs, any month when we refill our prescription at the pharmacy, the appearance could change depending on which generic version is being purchased by the pharmacy. And so if you're on five pills, and those five pills are made by five manufacturers, and each one has a different color scheme, that's five factorial, that's more than 3,000 different possible combinations of size, shape, and color that you'd fill every month. This can lead to increasing confusion for consumers. So take a step back. The FDA is becoming interested in how these things that are not the active pharmaceutical ingredient, these things that seem trivial, the appearance of a drug, can actually possibly be significant in whether drugs work or not.
We're flat out of time. There's lots more questions. Congratulations on this book.
Thank you so much, Sheila.
Dr. Jeremy Green. He's an associate professor of medicine and the history of medicine at Johns Hopkins. His book is Generic, The Unbranding of Modern Medicine. We spoke in September. We have a link to the book at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. After the news, a New York City hip-hop DJ talks with Tom about how to talk about race. Stay with us on 88.1.